chance to sign in when you came in, you might want to do that so we can keep you on the mailing list and keep you up to date on the things that we put out every once in a while and meeting notices and that sort of thing. Before we get started, I would like for you all to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This meeting is being held under the Open Meetings Act, and the notice was posted appropriately on the front of the building and the Secretary of State's office, I guess, and all that good stuff to keep this legal. Before we get started, traditionally we go around the table and introduce ourselves, what agency or group that we're with, so we're going to start up here with
Andrea Cruz, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation.
Mike Shagrue, Oklahoma Water Resources Board.
Mike Sharp, Conservation Commission.
Wade Patterson, Garfield County Assessor.
Shane Weber, Oklahoma Geological Survey.
Dave Wheelock, Oklahoma Department of Agriculture.
Drew Lawgiver from City Government.
Michael Larson, from the State Geographer.
Amy Britton, Department of Environmental Quality.
Dick Clark, Office of State Finance.
Alan Stevenson, Oklahoma Department of Transportation.
Dan Huff, Oklahoma Biological Survey.
Shelley Willoughby, Office of Geographic Information.
Michael Fenaro, Esri.
Anthony Moore, University of Oklahoma.
Charles Brady, City of Ardmore.
David, student.
Bob Rogers, Cobb Engineering.
David Bojan, Cobb Engineering.
Bart Estes, Cobb Engineering. Jared Smith, U.S. Geological Survey.
Julie Adams, Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Daryl Williams, U.S. Geological Survey.
Kendra Jones, Department of Transportation, GIS.
Kevin Tucky, Oklahoma Department of Transportation.
Don Schaefer, Oklahoma Tourism.
Susan Mealy, Department of Agriculture, Food Force.
Eric Phillips, Department of Libraries.
Cliff Rodworth, Department of Libraries.
Helen Agnew, OSU.
Dale Hedgecroft, Oklahoma County Assessor.
Scott Owen, ICP Technology.
Shane Leach, Oklahoma Natural Gas, GIS.
Michael Bamble, Plains Edge, Jury Service.
Ryan Banks, Visual Services.
Alan Janis, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife.
And Mark Reed, you want to introduce yourself?
Margaret Cassay, Center for Spatial Analysis.
Okay, thank you, everyone. As I mentioned, we do have a quorum, and the September meeting minutes have been circulated to council members, and put that up for your consideration and approval. Motion has been made and approved. Is there a second? Is there any discussion on that? Hearing none, those in favor of approving minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you. Okay, committee reports. Let's see. Amy, do you have anything on your group?
No.
Okay.
We're still working.
Okay.
But we'll figure out what our next project.
Okay. See, Troy's not here on the addressing standards group. Nothing's happened on that either. We do need to get together and move ahead on that. Charles rang my bell this week and said that things are happening out there that we need to get on top of. So we'll get that group together and start looking at our address standards for the state. Let's do that. Okay, Dan, on land cover?
Yeah, we do have some, quite a bit of to report there. So we met with David Diamond, the work group met with David Diamond after the last GIS council meeting we had lunch and then we met for about an hour, went over some more information about what he needed. One of the things he said that he would do is that when they're doing the remote sensing part in Texas, for the scenes that overlap Oklahoma, they would go ahead and do the whole scene and not stop the border. So that'll give them a little bit of a head start on being with us. And Alan Janis here at OPWC has some information on funding, so we're making some progress there. So,
okay, Alan.
We get to plug in here and talk a little bit where we're sitting at.
I
So basically, you know, after Dave's presentation, last September, hopefully most of you all got a chance to see that or have gotten to talk to Dave or visit one of our webinars that we've had in the last couple months as well. After that, we've been kind of beating down the phones, and Bill Bardish, who was here in September as well, his LCC has committed $200,000 to getting our land cover project done here in Oklahoma. Additionally, the Great Plains LCC has committed, and this is part of what Dan was talking about with the overlap with Texas a little bit, the $50,000 is the overlap with Texas, but they've committed potentially another $100,000. That's still pending. $200,000, we've nearly gotten in hand. Should be in hand shortly. WGA, I should find out in the next, actually by tomorrow, or not by tomorrow, by Tuesday, where we're sitting with that money. ODWC to date has probably committed in my time, you know, just facilitating a lot of these meetings and discussions that we've been having, about $50,000 to date. We've been in touch with GAP and been speaking with them. They're interested in this as well, and we should have a number from them potentially this spring, in March. They're using the Texas data, they love it, and they're very interested that we're doing this and would like to help us. In Oklahoma, I don't know if you're familiar with LCCs. We've got four LCCs in Oklahoma. We're kind of an oddball state. We've got two commitments for two LCCs, and there's another two LCCs out there that we're still approaching and trying to see what type of funding we can get from them. The NRCS is someone that's also been contacted with this. Julie, I don't think we contacted you directly about this, but
no,
I think
I'm just writing all this down.
There's been some discussions at higher levels
within
the NRCS about possibly getting you guys partnered in with this project as well, especially when we're talking about chicken or Western Prairie chicken.
Yep.
Something that this will definitely help for. And state partners, that's where I come to you guys and start talking to partners within the state. You know, right now we've got between $300,000 and $400,000, depending on how all this stuff shakes out with the commitments today. That'll get about half the state done. Project cost, Dave put an estimate between $700,000 and $1 million. Really, cash that we'll need is about $700,000. So that puts us about $300,000 to $400,000 short. To that end, what I would like to ask the council and kind of have a discussion about is, are there ways that we could partner and get a collaborative effort within the state to come up with that shortfall? You know, we get 15 state agencies together, you know, putting $20,000 a piece there, we're at that $30,000. And that $20,000 doesn't have to come in 1 year either. It could be over 2 years. You know, $10,000 this year, $10,000 next year, and $10,000 the year after. So my director is asked or is offered to write a letter to the directors of this council, you know, basically trying to solicit the funds. The question that I have, and maybe this is open for discussion, would that letter be sent? Better be sent from the GI Council to state agency directors to get this project done. I'd kind of like to see some discussion on that. Any questions with this stuff?
So you are going for the full state?
Full state. Full bank. And this will be the same of what Dave was showing at that September meeting, and then also, I believe we've had two webinars telling this as well that some of you have been on.
Okay, well, council members, what do you think? Is this something that we want to play a role in?
Well, you know, this is the type of things that my director was talking about. You know, when he's in his meetings with other state directors, this is the type of collaborative effort that's being asked from above to be a part of. So this is kind of a natural fit. This product just isn't an ODWC product. This is a product that will benefit a lot of our state agencies, from DOT, the Water Resource Board, to the Ag Department. This will be a very comprehensive product when it's all said and done.
I can see it being beneficial in the Conservation Commission as far as our water quality.
Watershed analysis, that's all part of this.
So, I'd like to hear what anybody had to say.
Well, there was a
suggestion to send letters to the agencies, some of the agencies that have membership on the GI Council. I think that would be a good first step.
Yeah, and, you know, in fact, I'm trying to think if there's some other agencies outside the council that we might want to contact too. Might be able to participate in this.
Yeah, if you guys could provide me with a list of agencies to contact, you know, I'd be happy to do that. I mean, one other thing that'll be needed on this is follow-up from within the agencies as well. So folks that have seen this presentation or would like to see this presentation again, we're going to have to be able to sell it internally as well, in addition to my director contacting other director heads. So if you need another webinar, we definitely do that.
Have we talked to anybody at the cabinet level, secretary of environment? Is that?
I'm not aware that we've talked to them.
Secretary of Environment is slightly aware, or it's been brought up in discussions about the Western Prairie Chamber about this product. I don't think they brought it up in full context.
That might be. Start at the top.
I think that's a good suggestion that maybe we do make have a presentation or go meet with the Secretary of Environment and get Secretary of Agriculture also with Mr. Reese. And I'd say those are the two primary groups that would be interested in this.
This is the vegetation land cover?
Yes.
So this is, it'll be really three products. It'll be a land cover product, a existing vegetation model, which will be the land cover product will be similar to what the NLC is, 12 to 16 class product. The existing vegetation model, if it's similar to Texas, will be in the 300 class range. Then also, there'll be an abiotic product that'll measure what's capable of being, or what potentially could be at some at a specific location. So it'll be a suite of products.
Susan, are you doing anything with land cover or forestry?
Other than complaining about what is okay now?
So in other words, what you're saying is you would have a use for this?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe we can get some more questions. So, yeah, we should.
I was also wondering.
I mean, I haven't done anything with land cover personally and what I've been doing, but, you know, we need to do forestry and
is there like something colorful and pretty that might help an administrator understand what this is that would accompany the letter?
Yeah, we could potentially bring or display some. Texas has created these interpretive pamphlets that basically they've created these products that highlight unique areas that people might want to visit or such, or you know, they'll look at a section of Texas and say, this is the unique vegetation that's in this area. If it would be appropriate, we could apply, you know, what Texas has done and with that.
And I would think that also work with the, not just the administrative level, but simultaneously the GIS level people
very
so
much.
That because the administrator's going to go, okay, let me go talk to my GIS person. Is this useful to you?
That's why I think we're going to have another webinar where more GIS people from the state agencies get involved and can see the product more so that's what's already in there.
What kind of grand resolution are we working towards here?
10 meter.
10 meter.
Is there any kind of tie-in like with wildfire where you can use this product to determine areas with higher wildfire?
They redid, in Texas, they redid the vegetation field modeling. That was done by Land Fire. They did an update of it with this. So yes, that's definitely.
That might be something. But
I think the Forest Service might have some interest in helping out with that.
Well, I guess I'm getting the sense that the council would like to support this effort. Is that the same reason? Okay. Well, why don't Shelley and I work with the Wildlife Department to kind of put together a letter and put together a a meeting with Secretary of Environment and Agriculture and kind of start there. Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds reasonable.
And see if we can start getting some feelers out to see if the interest and if there's some possible funding out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, with where we're at right now, we're going to have a product out in the next 10 to 18 months, or 10 to 12 to 18 months, excuse me. So if this thing gets dragged out a little bit longer, we'll have something to point to in the near future as well. But it's my hope that we can get all the funding cemented early and get this increase.
Are you using elevation data in this effort?
I should also mention that really ODWC's role in this has really been as a facilitator. We're not going to be doing a lot of the work. The work will be done through the biological survey and through Dave Diamond's shop in Missouri. So really we're just trying to help facilitate this process and get it done since it's a useful product.
Okay. Well, we don't want to get in your way of doing any of that type of facilitation.
No.
I think we're willing to help out.
Now, when you said you're going to have a product in 18 months or so, you're talking about the eastern portion, funded.
The pending funding is actually the panhandle. We may have the panhandle done in the next year, and the eastern part, the eastern portion of the state done in the next 18 months.
So they're saying that the eastern part has already been funded? So
that's because the Great Plains or the Gulf Coast and Prairies LCC is located in the eastern part of the state, so their money will be going to fund that area.
That might reduce the interest of forestry since the eastern part of the state has already been done. There's not as much.
It's not the full eastern part of the state.
Yeah, forestry went on in the west. So that way it's still.
Yeah, as I remember, that LCC is really the crossing.
Yeah, it's a crossing.
So it's not the.
It wouldn't be the Ozark.
It wouldn't be the Washington or the other one.
It's more mid-central.
It's the mid-east rather than the far east.
Yeah, it's not the far east, it's the mid-east.
Right.
That'd be correct way of saying it.
And then it would be.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that and we'll get together and
sounds good.
Proceed on
that. And you got to the Mesnet, they're the ones that, they run the fire models.
I've not spoke with any of them yet.
Okay, good. That pretty well covers our committee reports. We'll move right into the featured presentation of the day. And you see, we're going to be talking about the status of the broadband projects in the state. There's really three projects that are going on right now. We've got a mapping project, we've got planning project to advance broadband across the state, throughout the state. And then also we've got the Oklahoma Community Anchor Network that's going in. Some new fiber that's going to be in place around the state as well. So we've got a team of folks here that are going to make various portions of the presentation. Dick's going to start us off with the overview on the mapping project. And then Shelley's going to show us a few of the maps that have been produced so far throughout of this in an interactive mapping site. Then Marguerite's going to talk about some of the work they're doing down at CSA on the verification of this data, which is a big piece of this whole thing. And then Dick's going to get back and talk to us about the planning project, and then Tomati will give us just a brief overview of the OCAN project, Community Anchor project, and then Alan's going to wrap it up with some of the engineering, construction, and the GIS portion of that project. So we've got a lot of pieces here. So Dick, will us get out of your way and let you start off.
Okay. I'm going to stand over here so I'm not standing in front of everybody. Our Oklahoma Broadband Mapping Project. In January of 2010, Oklahoma was awarded a grant under the State Broadband Data Development, SBDD, program conducted by the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, which is actually under the U.S. Department of Commerce. The objective of this project is to map broadband availability across the state and nation, depicting the served, underserved, and unserved areas. So in Oklahoma,
we're developing maps to show that. And then there's also a national map that shows broadband availability. We contracted with the Sanborn Map Company. We put out an RFP and for this mapping project to have a contractor work with us on this project, and that was awarded to the Sanborn Map Company to collect broadband service and coverage information for broadband providers across the state. And of 134 providers in Oklahoma, 76 have participated in this voluntary program. I say voluntary because it is a voluntary program. We have some providers that have chosen not to participate, although as time has gone by, more and more providers are participating because they want their coverage shown on the map. They don't want to be left out. Information that's gathered from the providers is validated by Sanborn and is verified by a team at the OU Center for Spatial Analysis, and as Mike mentioned, Marguerite will be doing a presentation on their verification efforts. This information that's gathered is the basis for creating the Oklahoma broadband maps and is also submitted to NTIA to be incorporated into the national broadband maps. And you can actually go out on the internet and look at the national broadband maps by going to www.broadbandmap.gov. And that will show you the national map. From there, you can also go in and look at different states, and you can access all kinds of different information on the national maps. All the information that we gather from the providers has to be, of course, validated and verified and so forth, put into specific formats for NTIA so they can build the national map. The provisions of the grant require us to complete two rounds of data collection and submissions to NTIA each year. So since we started this project in 2010, we've done four submissions. We did two in 2010, and we've done two in 2011. We just completed the second one, which was due October 1. We have a website in Oklahoma also. Our Oklahoma Broadband Initiative website is www.ok.gov/broadband. And from there you can navigate to our mapping project and view coverage maps and apps for both citizens and community anchor institutions. Community anchor institutions are hospitals, schools, libraries, and so forth. To view the Oklahoma broadband maps, also to fill out surveys, take speed tests, and so forth. So, go to this website from your home, for example, you can fill out a survey. It asks you what kind of broadband service you have at your home, DSL, cable, wireless, whatever, what speeds you have, and so on. And then you can actually take a speed test and verify what speeds you're actually getting, upload and download. So it's pretty nifty. There's also a secure app out there for providers to view and validate the data that they have submitted for mapping. We have all the providers do that each time we get ready to do a submission. After the providers have turned in their data, we ask them to go out there and they have specific passwords, logons, and so forth, so they're the only ones that can get to that particular app. So this is a little bit small, but when you go to the website, Broadband Initiative page comes up, and then right along in here, you can click on Oklahoma Broadband Map, and that'll take you then to the mapping page, and it looks like that. And then from there, you can go to view the interactive maps, and also view the map gallery that's out there. Shelley's going to be showing you all these maps, so I won't belabor that. This is the main page for the interactive map website. Shelley will go through that. That interactive map website allows you to look at a lot of different information. There's 10 different data layers out there, broadband availability, cable, DSL, fiber, mobile wireless, fixed wireless, et cetera. You can actually look at all those different layers. So if you're in whatever town, you know, you can look at that map and say, okay, what do I have available in my location? Our project was originally funded for 2 years, but we were awarded a supplemental grant to fund the project for another 3 years through the end of 2014. So initially the project would have ended this year, but we did get a supplemental grant, and we're now going through the end of 2014. Any questions? Okay, I mentioned the OUCSA is doing verification, and Bart Reese will be doing a presentation on that. So.
All right, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go through really quick the website that Dick has mentioned. There's three different parts to this website. There's the interactive mapper, then there's the map gallery where they've already created static maps in case you need that. And there's also a link here for your speed test as well as the survey. There's interactive mapping. What they've done is Sanborn and AppGeo has created this website. One of the interesting things is Oklahoma is one of the very few sites that's doing this with open source. A lot of the others had used ArcServer, but we chose to do the open source route, being that we had used that for OK Maps, and it's worked very well. NTIA has been very impressed with the open source look of this and was pretty excited that we went that direction. One of the things that you can do with this, as Dick mentioned, is you have all of these different variables that you can map with. You have the terrain, your aerial photography. We have included all the census information, so you can ask questions of this data based on certain census information. How many people graduated from high school? We have population data, we have income data. But the main data that people are interested in is the broadband information. It's a little hard to see, but you can get to this site from the OK.gov website. But you can do the number of wireless providers, as well as cable availability. You can do your speeds. As Dick said, one of the ways we built this is we took surveys of people of their speed tests. Many of you might remember through the OK listserv, we sent out links asking you to take speed tests not only at your work but at home. And this allows you to tell us what kind of internet you have. All of that information was collected and used to build these maps. And then we can use those to help verify the data from the providers. You also have a way to type in a specific address. So if you want to know specifically what data was available in your house, type in your address, it zooms to that particular location. You can use the drop downs. Your typical mapping, you can zoom it, you can make things more transparent. So if I wanted to know specifically how many number of wireless providers were at this particular location, you can click on that point, and you can see down here, you now have a list of the different providers that are reporting that they have service in this particular area. You can also see what your speeds are, your download speeds, your upload speeds. So you can use this to judge what the various availability is in your area. You can do that for cable availability. Same thing, as you notice, as we go through this, this list down here will change by the providers. You can do DSL, you can do fiber. So it's a really good tool to be able to go through and look and see what kind of information is available for particular areas. This will tell you how many wireline versus wireless, how many different providers. So as you zoom in and out, you can start to see
a better statewide representation of the different areas. Using this tool, you can also click in any of these areas and watch this data change. It'll tell you the different providers that have service in that area. We also have put legislative districts in case for some reason a particular legislator was interested, does this fall within their district? So that data is there. And so if you wanted to start asking, I need a percent of population 65 over in particular areas with certain broadband availability or certain speeds, then you can ask those questions with the data. If you go back to the mapping home, then you can start looking at the static maps. And these are just maps that Sanborn has built based on recommendations from the team. We have a number of wireless providers. So you can take these, quickly print them off, hand them to somebody. Maybe. There it goes. And so these are all updated as different submittals are done. So this is a nice map just to be able to hand quickly to somebody or use it for reference. We also, not only did we do it for the state, but we also did it for the COG regions. So if you need to zoom in more to a particular area, then you can do that as well. So the website is broadbandmapping.ok.gov. And so you have your map gallery, you have your COG districts. We also included a lot of the information with the census, the percentage of high school graduates, median household income, DSL availability. So you can go on this website, look at the different static maps, see what you have interest in. We were talking about the speed test. That link's also on this page. You can say work, home, or other, type in your address, you can choose a provider, and then it'll ask you a bunch of questions and you can test your speed in and out. And that will allow you to, that information is then sent to Sanborn and FGO for mapping, and it also allows you to see where you compare. Because not only does it compare your particular area, but it compares you to other states. I think we had Kansas and Texas and a couple of others. So if we wanted to do this really quick, see if I can do this. So if you don't know your provider, you can just say, I don't know. It asks you, is this where we are at? So when it asks you to begin your speed test. So what it's doing is it's just testing. So it'll do both upload and download. And it gives you a graph that shows, compares you to.
That's a 53 megabytes down.
Yes.
Megabits, I think.
Megabits per second. Megabits per second. And then the upload is 37.5 megabits per second. So.
I want your connection.
It's not mine, it's theirs. So that's just a quick version of the website as well as the speed test that we have. So if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer that.
Did Sanborn develop your web mapping, or was that?
AppGeo, which is in partnership with Sanborn, they were the ones that helped us with this.
By geographics.
Yeah.
How often are their static maps updated? I missed that.
They are updated every time we do a submittal. We do two submittals a year, and once that data is calculated, and they'll go through and redo the maps.
And I couldn't see. Is there a date on the map that indicates as to when, what
believe there is. I don't know that for certain, but I believe that there is a date on there that says specifically when that date is.
Okay, hey, Marguerite, do you want to load up your thing?
Elevation of the data independent of what Sanborn's doing. All the data that comes from Sanborn is directly from the providers. And so, for instance, when we first got the wireless data for the state, according to the providers in the state, the entire state's covered with broadband service and has the ability and that there's no problems. So our job is actually to come up, take a bottom-up approach. We are contacting actually residents and people in the state of Oklahoma and businesses in the state of Oklahoma and asking them about their wireless service. We're not just interested in do they have broadband service or do they have internet. We're interested in do they have internet. If they don't have internet, why not? Why aren't they using internet? Is it cost? Is it that dial-up meets your needs? You don't use computers? Why don't you use computers? We're trying to get a feel for what the attitude and the utilization is of Oklahomans in the state of Oklahoma. Because part of this initiative was to develop for economic development purposes as well. Online services out in the rural community is very important. Online services, broadband services are very important to emergency managers. It's very important to telemedicine. It's very important to the tribal agencies. Working with Choctaw Nation, they're almost 100% dependent a lot on telemedicine for specialized care. So the existence of broadband service and availability and cost is huge for many people in the state of Oklahoma. So our focus, even though we pick up in the rural areas, we're really focusing on the rural areas to find out what their needs are, where we have limitations. We're also looking at, when we do this, we're looking at what we're referring to as false positives and false negatives. And that's where we find places where the providers indicate that they do in fact have service, broadband service available, but reports and the surveys filled out by businesses or individuals, residents in the state indicate it's not. So, and we're asking information about that. We are also picking up the false negatives, in which we do have some because this is like a moving target in that the companies, AT&T, all the time are laying new lines and they're providing new services and they're widening their gaps. So our target moves, and sometimes it was, the provider said, no, I didn't have service, and by the time we get a response from the resident, the service has gone up and the resident does now have service. And you can see here, it is at the census block level. Here is an example of, this is in East Norman where we only have wire lines. And you can see we've got little islands out there in which all the way around it, they're indicating there's no service available. And then I've got a little census track in there or a census block that says, yeah, I've got service. So somewhere, something's not quite right. Either there's service out there, they don't know it's out there. Maybe it's advertising they need. Maybe they've moved since that time and they're just not aware of it. Here is the opposite example where we show that the whole area is fully covered, but we've still got blocks that aren't showing there is any. So here, isn't this our building? This is OU's building, in which the providers say there is no service, this is the building we work in, and there is service for the entire OU campus. Why is there no service showing up? It doesn't make sense, because there's been service out there for years. So these are the kinds of things we're looking at. What ways we're doing it currently, we have sent out emails, worked with Dick, and we've sent out emails to almost every state employee, asking them to fill it out for their residents. We've targeted the ag extensions, have worked with me to send it out to their mailing list that they have. I've worked with PHS, mental health services to get their county offices, and asking them to get their employees hard as well. We have also done mail outs where we've done a random sample of rural areas of residents throughout the state and sent out mail outs and have requested them to send it back. And also have had people contact us and go, can we have more surveys? We're going to give it to our friends, or they've dictated themselves, and we're encouraging them to do that. We're also currently on the phone, and we're calling all what has been identified as core anchor institutions in the state and communities, and that's volunteer fire departments, police departments, libraries, hospitals, healthcare centers, whatever. There's like 5,000 CAIs that we've identified on this list. And we originally started out with emails. Dick sent them letters and emails, and they weren't very good at responding. So now we're personally calling them and asking them about the service and their capability that they have. And our new initiative that we're doing right now is we're actually going out to small communities where we've identified target areas that we're not getting a response from, we're having no response, and we're personally talking to businesses. Yes.
So what's your response rate been on each of these surveys so far?
Well, first of all, on the mail out is typically low, it's 20%. Since we're doing snowmall on the email, you really don't have a response rate you can do, because you have no idea where all it's been. So I can't really answer that. The telephone survey is difficult. We have probably 30% that they were able to get information from them when we directly call the CAIs the first time. The majority of them we have to call back and chase down their IT person, so that list is quite long. But we only have about, I would say, less than 1% that are failing and refusing to give us any information at all. We're just having to chase them around. Because most of the numbers we have are like dispatches or their main entrance numbers, and we have to chase down and find the right person. And face-to-face, when Matt and I have gone out and done face-to-face as we're driving through the communities, I mean, we're really just walking into quick stops or hardware stores or then saying, can I ask you some information about your broadband service? This is what we're about. This is what the state wants to do. We've only actually had two people out of all the stops we've made that refused to give us any information. Most of them actually give us information on their relatives and others, so we're able to pick up more through snowballing that way as well. And most of the time when they don't have broadband service, I've had them go, you need my address. And they've chased us down and said, you absolutely have to fill this out for me. So that the face-to-face has worked very well. We also have UMass, a validation survey that we have online. And we also have one in the Adobe clickable format that we can send out if you want a copy of that, or you can send them to this online survey and take it. We do ask more information than the one that Sam talked about, because we want to know why they don't have service. So we're getting a feel for cost as well.
Are these surveys, are they available from the website?
You can go online, you can contact us, and we'll send you copies of them, however you want to. If you want some surveys, just contact me. Matt, raise your hand. Matt is a graduate student that's working with us currently, and you can contact us, and we'll give you all the surveys you want. We are also looking at what I would like to do is, I was out at Greenleaf State Park and was talking to some of the cabin house cleaners out there, because those are the areas where we're likely not to have service, and Greenleaf doesn't. People that were working, the state employees that were working there, they don't have it either. But those are the ones that weren't reached. And so I hand deliver those surveys so that I can get responses from them. This so far is all the survey points. You can't tell, and Matt, we didn't get the numbers on that. So far, these are the areas that we've gotten response back from. And as you can see, we've got some in most places. we will be targeting those counties that we absolutely have no points for to begin with. That will be our starting point with our new initiatives that we're taking. This is a map of the responses we've got, and that the gold and color are the ones that we're saying there is no service available. And what we're finding very interesting is that a lot of them, even in the metro areas, are saying there's no service available to them. And as we're breaking it down and coming down in, and Matt laughs at me, because I live in Norman, and in the area I'm at, I don't have broadband service. I don't even have the wireless service available. So that's one of the interesting things we're finding is even though we assume that all of the metro area is covered well, not necessarily. Then the red that you see there, that is where people are saying they don't have it because it costs too much. And that was the area in which we were looking at some issues, and Mike and Dick, there was a big discussion on what do we consider underserved as opposed to unserved. Unserved was very obvious, no broadband service available. Underserved being, okay, is it cost? Is it when they only have one service provider available? Is that really kind of underserved as well? And I think we ended up, what was the definition we ended up with on that?
We came up with a speed of 3 megabits per second download, and one had to have at least two providers, I think.
Two providers to be considered served in their area. This indicates people who just say they're not using it because the cost is way too much. And the purple, the kind of purpley, is where they say availability is a problem and the cost is a problem as well.
Do you filter for HughesNet and satellite broadband service?
On these particular maps, we don't, but we are collecting information on who their provider is, so it is something that we can do. And the maps that are up on the state website have our information fed into them, and they flag their data for where there's a discrepancy between us and the provider, and they also try to start finding out what's going on. And as a result of that, they have had some providers change their coverage maps. So
the satellite providers, what NTIA, initially NTIA said, don't include the satellite providers because they'll just tell you that they cover the whole state. And so they were left off of those initial maps. Now we are mapping satellite providers and setting those up in separate maps. And interestingly, even though they say they cover the whole state, they actually may not. There may be some dead spots. If you're in the hills in southeastern Oklahoma, for example, and depending on where the satellite is located, you actually may not have coverage of satellite. So, and then, of course, the cost is a factor, too.
This we just put on there. The area where you've got red stripes is our calling area that we have first focused and targeted for the telephone calls that we started. And the area in blue is our second group of, we've hired a second group of students to start calling for us. And these are the areas they're targeting in. The red lines that you see, I believe that's VTOP, and the proposed VTOP
line. I'll be talking about that.
And they'll be talking to the engineers will be talking about what those lines are and how they came up with. But as you can see, our calling area that we're phone calling in pretty much falls within the proposed lines. And in this next slide, these are the communities that go along that proposed line that we'll be targeting to start with. Our very first one, though, will be to hit those two counties. Woods and Cimarron, for sure, have no points, no response, no information coming from them, so we'll be going out there first. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody wants to help set up meetings? We're also, part of our plan is to set up community meetings, come out and talk to residents and community leaders about the importance of broadband service, why they need it in their community and support. And part of this not only is get the broadband infrastructure laid, which is our purpose, is just to get the infrastructure out there is this group's purpose, but it can also bring in business and encourage other providers to develop services in the areas.
So is this fiber? Is this a proposed fiber route? Is it, so I guess it's just something
talked about
Dick and then we're talking more specific about how that's Actually, I think we've already got somebody online, aren't we, to help start laying some there?
We have an office in Broken Bow, and they have really bad internet service down there. It's on your list there.
Have them pay to speak to us.
Marguerite touched on this a little bit, and OUCSA is actually going to be working with us on the planning part of this project. Marguerite talked about the work that they're doing, contacting community anchor institutions across the state, doing surveys they're doing, and so forth. When Oklahoma was awarded the grant for mapping, a component of that mapping project, with separate funding, was for broadband planning. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what does that mean. As we mentioned, the state has now collected broadband service and coverage information from broadband providers for 2 years. That's yielded a base of information and maps from which to launch our planning project. So we now have a base of information there. We, as you've seen on the maps and Marguerite talked about and so forth, and now we can really get into what we call the broadband planning aspect of this. As I mentioned, the University of Oklahoma Center for Spatial Analysis, which has the team that's been performing the verification validation provider data, will also now have a team working on the planning project. And typically their teams are comprised of grad students and so forth that work with us on these projects. The project is actually commencing this quarter, and we're projecting it will be completed by the fourth quarter of 2013. OUCSA is going to be working on the following goals. I've just kind of listed them out here. These are the major tasks and goals of the planning project. First is to analyze the mapping data, and based on the Oklahoma broadband coverage maps and responses from the mailings and the phone surveys and so on, define the challenges and the opportunities to adoption of broadband faced by different demographic and social groups. Marguerite talks about pricing might be too high, but whatever.
We will then create maps to show regional differences in broadband adoption challenges and develop education materials and public relations campaign tailored to the regional challenges and opportunities identified. And we're also going to be collecting consumer data concerning the use of broadband in the underserved and unserved areas, including information technology capabilities and understanding. What does that mean? That means, do you have a PC in your home? Do you know what a PC is? Do you know how to use a PC? That's what that means, information technology capabilities and understanding. There are a lot of folks out there who don't have PCs. A lot of folks who would not know how to work a PC if they had one. Collecting cost data, monthly fees, and the usage limits at cities and towns across Oklahoma. The previous tasks suggest that cost is a factor for broadband adoption, and compare the cost of fees with average household income in different ethnic groups. OUCSA is working on that aspect of it, as Marjorie touched on. We'll also be assembling statewide meetings for professional and tribal communities, conservation, county assessors, public safety, emergency managers, and first responders, public school administrators, tribal governments, mayors, and so on. And going across the state, conducting meetings in these communities with these individuals to talk about broadband and get their feedback directly. These are some of the face-to-face meetings that Marguerite is talking about. We'll also be preparing and holding display booths at statewide meetings with survey sheets available for attendees to fill out or take away for further distribution and so forth. And then we'll be identifying and developing priorities and strategies for expanding broadband accessibility in the underserved and unserved areas. We'll also be inviting leaders from communities and organizations to participate on a broadband planning committee to discuss and evaluate the data and prioritize areas for broadband expansion and promotion. As we've mentioned, you know, this project, which goes back to, this is all funded, by the way, under the ARRA program, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and President Obama, as one of the initiatives, wanted to get broadband expanded out to basically cover the entire nation. Broadband should be available to anybody in the country that wants it. And quite frankly, the U.S. is behind many of the European countries and other countries in terms of broadband availability. A lot of the European countries, you can get fiber optic right to your home. Some communities in the U.S. are starting to do that. Then we'll develop a plan and materials tailored to Oklahoma for a consumer education and awareness initiative to increase the adoption and utilization of broadband throughout Oklahoma. So there will be an education program developed to increase awareness, to educate the public and so forth. And then we'll be developing and holding workshops and community meetings across the regions and towns and doing this education outreach. One of the key things also would be developing a strategic plan that will leverage community colleges, schools, libraries, hospitals, and other key community-based facilities to promote broadband applications and realize broadband potential for community development. And the Oklahoma Department of Libraries also received a grant under this BTOP program, this Broadband Technology Opportunities Program, for expanding public computing centers and libraries across the state. Now, obviously, if you're out there and you don't have broadband at home, I obviously can't ask you to get online and take a survey or do a speed test and so forth. But to learn more about the broadband initiative and so forth, we'd be encouraging people to go to their libraries or wherever they have public computing centers in their communities to do that. So that's pretty, it's just broad brush what the planning project is. And in point of fact, in the activities that Marguerite and her team have been performing in this validation process, they've actually begun to perform some of these planning tasks. You heard some of the things that she presented, and they've really kind of jumped ahead there But now we've worked with OU and Mike and Shelley and others to kind of formalize what is our approach going to be to planning, to accomplishing this planning project, and what are the deliverables going to be out of that. And I think that's what I've just talked about. Okay, then I want to talk about another project. Talked a little bit already about our Oklahoma Community Anchor Network project. This is a project that is also funded under the BTOP program, Broadband Technology Opportunities Program. In August of 2010, Oklahoma received our grant award in the amount of almost $74 million for a middle mile comprehensive community infrastructure CCI project under that BTOP program. As it says, this is a middle mile project, and I just put a little couple lines there to explain what last mile versus middle mile is, in case you may not be aware. Last mile is the connection between your home or wireless device and your broadband service provider. The middle mile is the connection between your broadband service provider and the internet. So this is a middle mile project, not bringing fiber directly to a home or a business, if you will. The Oklahoma Community Anchor Network Project, or OCAN as we refer to it, will complete a build out of 1,005 miles of new middle mile fiber infrastructure around the state. Our route will touch 35 of Oklahoma's 77 counties, approximately 89% of the state's population, and it's all on state right away. That is a little bit inaccurate because some of it is actually on interstate highway right away also. The OCAM project will directly connect 32 anchor institutions in underserved and unserved areas of the state. One of the requirements of the grant, of these grants under the BTOP program, and virtually every one of the 50 states has received one of these grants, and of course even some private providers have received grants under the BTOP program to expand their infrastructure, put up more towers, put in more fiber, whatever. One of the requirements of the grant was that the states was that you have to connect some community anchor institutions, schools, libraries, hospitals, first responders, and so on. Our route will directly connect 32 of those institutions where they really don't have great broadband service today. Within 5 miles of our OCAM project, there are 1,154 community anchors that could be connected by a last mile provider. So if Cox or AT&T or whomever wants to connect to our OCAM fiber, this another provision of the grant is that our fiber has to be completely open. Anyone can connect to it that wants to. There's no restrictions on it. And built with the OCAM project will provide middle mile fiber infrastructure for commercial providers, as I just said, that they can connect to. We're not in competition with any commercial providers, just putting additional infrastructure on it, get broadband out there so that others can connect to it. Get the infrastructure out. You saw this map, earlier version of this map. The blue lines on that map are existing fiber that the state has around the state, and the red lines are the OCAN project. You can see that that's all, we have a lot on Interstate 40, on east and west, and then other state highways around. There's a section down here, green line, that is where we're actually partnering with Pine Telephone in the southeastern part of the state to get additional broadband into that area of the state. Pine Telephone covers a lot of that southeastern part of the state.
Is Pine one of the other BTOP recipients?
Pine also, yes. There were, I forget how many, I think somewhere between 10 and 20 other providers in Oklahoma that received grants. And Pine is one of those. Our status at this point, somebody asked earlier, what are we doing this, what's happening? One of the first things that we had to complete on the project was an environmental assessment. Time you put infrastructure in, particularly under federal funding, you have to complete an environmental assessment. That's been completed. We got the finding of no significant impact, FONSI, as they call it, in around May, if I remember right, I think it was there. The engineering design, which Alan is going to talk about a little bit, that he's spearheading in ODOT. I should have mentioned, but I didn't have this on one of the slides, but when we put our application for this grant together in early 2010, there were three agencies that worked on this, OSF, ODOT, and OneNet. And we have a partnership on this grant. OSF has responsibility for managing the grant and doing all the reporting and so forth. ODOT is doing the construction, all the engineering and construction, and then OneNet will be doing the operation of the network, just like they do on the existing OneNet network and so forth. That engineering design is to be completed by mid-November this month. We had a RFP out for 16 communication huts. These will be pretty elaborate communication huts. Alan will probably talk about those a little bit. 16 of those around the route of OCAN that will provide space for electronics for OCAN as well as for other providers, the separate areas. And then we had the RFP out for the 1,000-plus miles of fiber. There'll be mixed. Some of the, along all the state highways will be 48-strand fiber. Along the interstates will be 96-strand fiber. Those bids came in 27th. And Alan and I and some others are in the process of reviewing those right now. The RFPs for construction will be issued probably in December. I think Alan will talk about that a little bit when the engineering designs are completed. Project divided into 31 segments. And then the RFPs for the additional materials, the conduit, the handholds, et cetera, those will be issued coming up here. We wanted to get the RFP out for the fiber because of the tsunami in Japan. The demand for fiber optic cable just skyrocketed, and there are significant lead times right now on getting fiber optic cable. So we got that out, got the responses back on that. Any questions? So as you can see, we're still kind of in the early stages of this project. It took us a while to really. We got the award in August of 2010, but as I mentioned, get that environmental assessment done. And you can't do anything, can't spend any money until you have an environmental assessment. So obviously on 1,005 miles, that was a significant effort for LDOT to get completed. Question?
Who owns the fiber optic lines?
Once this project is completed, this is under federal grant, so the federal government will have an interest. There'll be a federal interest in this fiber for 20 years, which means that we can't, but it'll be owned by the state. OCAN is not a separate agency or anything, that's just the name of our project, but it'll be owned by the state, but there'll be that federal interest in it for 20 years.
And does AT&T or Cox or whoever, do they like lease or pay anything to the state for the use of those?
If Cox or AT&T wanted to lease strands of fiber, then yes, they can lease strands of fiber from us on an IRU. And that's typically how that would be done. Pioneer. I said 134 providers. I couldn't believe there were that many providers in Oklahoma. That's pretty much all I have.
So, Alan, do you want to cover some of the things on the construction? Which one is besides you?
Yeah. And I'm probably, since I'm last, I'm going to be repeating some of the things everybody else said, so I'm going to try not to do that and try to think of other things that everybody else has not discussed. So one of your questions a second ago was about who else would be able to
escape.
Okay. Would be able to access this. Part of the reason, the whole thing about the broadband is since they've determined that there's not enough broadband service in the state and the feds are putting money into the program to put fiber into it, the purpose of that is not for ODOT or the state, sorry, ODOT, the state to own the fiber, is so that the infrastructure can be put in place at a state level and then lease back or IRU, what they call an irrevocable right to use, to telecommunication companies. That way they can build out their system and expand their system to be able to provide more to the state population and to the different entities. One of our tasks is not only to get that base fiber in the ground, but also, as Dick alluded to, we have 32 anchor institutions that we're supposed to hook up. Those are all everything from higher education colleges, some libraries, hospitals, Department of Public Safeties, so that we can establish this ring. And in doing that, then those facilities will actually be able to be on the state's network, which Office of State Finance and OneNet are going to be operating this state network, that those state agencies now can ride for cheaper than what they would have had to been leasing things from other telecommunication. The other telecommunication companies will be able to expand and provide for private businesses and those things, but it also gives us the infrastructure to support state agencies at a lower cost and possibly reduce overall state budget expenditures. If you can imagine, you've got just from what his map was showing a minute ago, just in the 5 miles, you have almost 1,200 state facilities that are within 5 miles of this fiber. When we were looking at DOT, we were trying to get 10 or 20 meg of bandwidth from Lawton back here. It was going to be $4,000 a month. So those things are really what drive this expansion and trying to make this available to everyone to increase that, that bandwidth. My function in this is I'm Dick's whippy boy. He wants me to get it all in the ground. And we, as they were saying, you know, the grant, they gave it to us, and then we had 6 months. It took us about 6 months to get the environmental assessment done for 1,000 miles. But then that only leaves us about a two-year window to get the entire thing done. So some of the things we were trying to, from an engineering aspect, we had to figure out how to approach this. Kind of, you know, the old analogy is, you know, how do you eat an elephant? An elephant one bite at a time. So what we did is we actually took this entire system. Now his was all red and I color-coded mine different colors. But we took this project and divided it up into six different areas or regions that we wanted to sit there and focus on. And then those we subdivided again. So we actually have 31 construction projects that we're actually going to end up doing construction on. Making them smaller projects that we can actually have starting and ending and getting things done in a timely manner. If you try to get, if you imagine on 1,000 miles, if you were going to try to get survey information, to go out there and survey the information of where you're going to put this, it would take the 2 years at least or more just to do that. So that's kind of how I got involved in GIS. When I started doing fiber optic installations, survey was not really an option for us. So what we ended up doing is we used aerial photography and GIS to actually establish routes and do our design all in a GIS environment instead of a CAD environment, which is totally weird for us engineering people. We always like CAD. But so the GIS environment really helped us in that aspect. So one of the first things we did on this project is we took, and we actually had aerial flight, low altitude aerial flight. We got 1 foot pixel in the rural areas, 6 inch in the urban areas of the entire route so that we could actually have the latest information. Then actually taking those 31 projects, we took and actually divided it up and hired 6 different consultants to do the design plans. And each of those have about 150 miles worth of various segments. If you can imagine, each one of the set of plans are probably close to 200 pages, a set of plans for this construction. All of these things we were kind of doing from a more of a GIS aspect. One of the things we, the purpose of this, doing this, also is from mine is ODOT has about 940 linear miles of fiber in the ground right now that we utilize for what we call intelligent transportation systems. The cameras and the message boards, and smart work zones, things like that that we put out on the interstate to try to inform people more about what's going on. But in that, we had to have also a way of being able to manage all those fibers. Not only do you need to know where the fibers are as far as where they've been placed out in the facilities, at the highway, where the handholds are, where the access points are, what strand is being used by who, what equipment's on it, all those things were really important. Well, that drove us that we really needed to be able to do this, and we've been doing it in a GIS environment. But since we're about to double the amount of linear miles of fiber that we're going to actually have to maintain and keep up with information on, we decided to look at a data model. Esri had a telecommunication data model that actually we took and added a bunch of additional elements to it that were more ODOT and state specific to keep up with. So that kind of helped us. We also created templates in our CAD and GIS environment for our consultants to actually do the design work in. So when they complete that, the work that they've done before they placed it and all the information, will be able to import back into our GIS environment and actually fill in all of our data models so that we can actually have intelligence behind it. One of the big things that you end up running into is what they call backhoe fade, where some contractor's gotten out there and he starts digging with the backhoe and all of a sudden he cuts your fiber optic line and now you've lost your signal and kind of faded out. Well, that's all great if the guy on the backhoe wants to jump up and call you and say, hey, I just hit your line, yeah, you come out and fix it. Well, it doesn't work that way. What they do is they kind of cover it up, pack up, and they drive off as fast as they can. Well, from our standpoint, what we need to be able to do is figure out where that cut is. All we can see is equipment is down now. So what we do is we actually get on and we use a device called an OTDR, and actually send a signal of light across the fiber, and actually it'll tell you how far it is. It's at, you know, 86,000 feet down the segment. Well, with the GIS environment, we can actually now know where that distance is because we can have tracing capability on our network and our system in the GIS environment, and we can go, okay, it's over here at, you know, Lawton or somewhere that we need to go out there and have somebody go out and look and see who's dug into our facility. So the GIS is extremely important for us at the state level in trying to manage our assets. We're not really good, or my area is not very good at some of these other things that you guys do, but you know, it's more of an asset management system for us at a large level. So any questions on the information I've been throwing at you so far? Okay.
Alan, I'm curious how you determine where your 16 huts are going to go on this graph.
That's really just a matter of need. On a fiber optic, your electronics, you can send electronics about 60 miles. But what we did is we located all the anchor institutions first, and then we found where we had gaps and that we would need to have some kind of reach-in site to be able to sit there and keep that signal going. One of the things that, and Dick really didn't, he left me this to talk about. So one of the things that when we're putting on this is we're actually creating a DWDM system. It's a normal strand of fiber. You can put various types of electronics on it. You can put 100 meg or 1 gig or 10 gig connections on those. And then there's above that, you can actually put a DWDM system, which creates lambdas, what we're doing is a DWDM system, which takes two strands and creates 40 lambdas on it, and each lambda is 10 gig. So that is a lot of bandwidth that are going to run on those two strands of fiber.
How many strands are you putting in the ground?
Like on I-40, we're putting 96 in. But that, again, majority of that is available for telecommunications companies to be able to use to expand their service. Because that's the driving force of this, is not only for us to get it in the ground for the state use, but really to make it available for the telecommunications companies. So we've already established and worked out things for IRUs and to be able to lease out those fibers to them, where we can stay afloat and make sure that the electronics and everything stays operational for our systems, but it make it available to them at a low enough cost that it's worthwhile. We've already got one telecommunication company that's come to the table and wants to actually build almost 300 miles of this in joint cooperation with us because it is such a good deal. You're leveraging the federal funds along with the private industry to expand the overall network. So, now my map's not as pretty as his. I was doing the same thing, basically 1,000, looking at what's within 1,000 feet. Let's move past this one since it's not near as good as Dick's was. So the sets of plans, some of the things we're having to do is, like we said, we're using the aerial photography. One of the things we don't have time to do is go out and get surveys. So we actually took all the existing construction maps where we actually did the construction plans hard copies. We scanned them in and created TIFF images out of them. And then we geo-referenced them, and then those were brought into the aerial imagery so that we could draw on top and actually have information like right-of-way, where the drainage structures, all the information for the construction also in there as well as part of our design plans. The lower level is actually blow-ups of the upper level. Since the upper level is like at 1 inch is equal to 200 feet, we needed to be able to get some more detail, so we made also some smaller blow-ups. One of our consultants, who happens to be in the room, did a real good job at this. Same thing on the urban areas. In the urban areas, in both of these, we're going to end up having aerial photography down at the bottom as well as at the top. Just in the time I had to sit there and get this, I had to use the one we don't have the images on the rural area there. But it shows you where all the other utilities are. So one of the other things that this is going to do from a DOT standpoint is we allow a lot of people in the state right-of-way to put utilities into our state right-of-way, but we don't actually have a historical database or record of exactly where they put it versus where they told us they were going to put it. That never really matches up. So this is also going to give us an inventory of at least 1,000 miles of the utility information on one side of the highway. This just shows where we're going over to an anchor institution. One of the things, like here, I brought up an example where we're coming into the ODOT facility. The primary purpose of this is to be able to keep track of all your fibers, all your assets, all the connections. This is showing all the equipment that we've got in this communication hut. This is being similar to, we'll have equipment in each one of those 16 that you talked about, as well as also the anchor institutions that we have to have. We'll be able to know what fibers are in use, what equipment's being used, and then like this, it'll show you which strand, what port is being used by who, and we can keep track and monitor all this at a GIS level environment. Is our hope. It definitely makes it easier if you know where all your assets are and what's going on versus trying to troubleshoot kind of in the dark and blind. And these are just some of the typical installations details. So, did anybody have any questions about the design aspects of this? I know, Bobby, you do. Come on, what? You've asked everybody else a question.
Well, these are just aerials that have been flown. They're not LIDAR surveys or anything.
Okay, now I'm a civil engineer. Now what are you asking me?
The aerials, they're just flown.
Yes.
And they're not LIDAR surveys.
Correct.
Help me out there.
The aerials that were flown are 1 foot and 6 inch for urban and rural. We didn't do any LIDAR or anything because all the assets are functionally underground. Utility information that LIDAR wouldn't actually be able to connect. So it would have been too much information and nothing that would have helped with the design process. The major portion of flying those aerials was to give edge of concrete, edge of right-of-way, information for the designers so that they could lay in the fiber from the aerials without having to do physical ground surveys and...
So you didn't need the concrete to get right over?
No. And most of this was on state right away, so there's what we have as-built information for a lot of that kind of thing. Slow and rich information.
Any other questions? I think, as you can see, this broadband effort in the state is a pretty big deal. There's a lot of people involved in this thing, a lot of entities. And it's, as you can tell, it's very map-centric, a lot of GIS going into this, and there's a lot of GIS that will come out of it, too, as far as geospatial information to manage. But, you know, we've got a lot of teams working on this. I think they're doing a great job. And as you can see, I think this is the first time I've seen all this put together in one place, you know, go from start to finish. So I appreciate the effort of everybody that put on something today, and I'd like you to join me in thanking them for that. We've got a general GIS discussion or any data issues. Anybody has anything they want to bring up? I'll just mention one thing that came out yesterday. The USGS, the Federal Geographic Data Committee, has announced their cooperative agreement program for the coming year. And we've got six or seven categories out there to for you to look at getting a CAT grant in. So I encourage you to go look at that. I think Daryl's going to post that to the listserv so that you'll have access to that if you haven't already seen it. I think the proposal will have to be in by the middle of January, if I'm correct here. Anyway, so take a look at that and see if there's an opportunity that you might be interested in applying a grant for. Anybody have anything else?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I just recently put... updated our on our water board webpage. On the left hand side there, kind of down, there's a little section that says updated maps. Under there, there's a link that says data. And I put a bunch of our data out there, so if you get a chance, you can check that out. Water quality standards, groundwater, surface water information. That's out there now. Data warehouses. Get everybody up there.
Okay, great. Anything else? Okay, how about any announcements? You got anything coming up?
We've got some ArcGIS training. We had the conference a week or so ago. We're right now in the process of grabbing the presentations that everybody saw. So if you didn't get to make the presentation, you should be able to go online to SCOG.org and download those presentations. But we had such a good turnout with training that we're probably going to have our ArcGIS Basics 1 class December, and then probably our ArcGIS Basics 2 class in January. And then in Edmond, when is it, January?
February 15th.
There you go, February 15th. We're going to have an emergency operations kind of focused user group meeting. So we're still getting all the presenters for that.
What if you signed up but didn't get your bag and your stein?
Talk to her.
That's why I'm out.
I'll see what I can do. Let me know.
Yeah, thank you all for putting on the SCOG conference. That was a good conference.
Thank you.
Okay, nothing else? I guess we'll look at...
Did you want to mention something about the NHD workshop?
Oh, yeah. We're looking at maybe in February or March conducting a NHD National Hydrography Data Set editing class. And I don't have any details on that at this point, but if anybody's interested in that, I'm looking for people that will be actively want to participate in editing and updating the NHD data set. So if you're interested in that, just get in touch with me and I'll keep you informed with the updates, when and where kind of thing.
Those of you who don't know, Water Board is our data steward for that particular data layer for the state.
So. I'll send out an announcement on this server too.
Okay, I guess we'll look at our next meeting, which we won't have one in December, so January. First Friday in January is the 6th. That will work for everybody after the new year.
As long as there's not a blizzard.
Is what?
As long as there's not a blizzard.
Blizzard, yeah. Well, we'll see. Never know. Strange weather. Lenny is still here, they said, so we'll see what it brings us this year. Okay, nothing else? I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Who?
I think I heard a move. First and second, yeah. Okay, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you all for coming.